Okay, welcome to the walkthrough for problem set 8. Last problem set, final one, really exciting. This is a whole new problem set, and it's super, super cool. Like, this is, you're playing games, you have a lot of visuals, a lot of graphics, you have a lot of design discretion. It's super, super cool. This is something that's going to be addicting, and something that you are going to want to send your friends to play with, which I know we said about PSET 7, but it's more true for PSET 8, I think. So let's actually make this one go viral and make everyone on campus start spreading it around. The purposes of this problem set the focus of the problem set is JavaScript, HTML, CSS. So that's largely what we'll be covering today. There's a ton of distribution code that we'll look through. You guys aren't actually required to write that much code for this problem set. The goal isn't really to have you manipulate for loops and all these other constructions that you've learned. Like you have in the past to do things, but rather it's to allow you to explore a new language, to allow you to explore new APIs, and basically to equip you with tools that you'll need after CS50. So when you want to do your own projects or even just for the final project, there'll often be times when you'll be told, okay, implement this, or you'll just think, oh, I could do this for a student group, and you'll want to use an API, or you'll want to use a different language that you don't know, and this will be immensely helpful to you to start learning how to acquire these new languages. So we say that the real power of CS50 isn't that we teach you C necessarily. It's that once we've taught you C, you have all the tools you need to teach yourself basically any other language. And JavaScript is substantially different, if you think about it. And PHP was a little bit different, but you'll find that these languages are somewhat easier than C because you don't have to worry about malloc and you don't have to worry about types really or pointers or anything like that. So you find that they're actually fun languages to learn. And just over the summer I had to learn C#, for example, which doesn't really have anything to do with C besides the name, but it was incredibly easy to do because of all the tools I had from CS50. So you'll find that that'll be true for you, and this is going to be your first exercise in doing that. So it's going to involve a lot of going online, looking at these API documentations, looking at JavaScript documentation online, trying to figure these things out for yourself. But the actual code that you're going to end up writing and functionality that you're going to implement is fairly small. You know, you're not going to be building the whole game, obviously, because a lot of that is already built in for you. But on the flip side, you can choose to build a lot more stuff. So you can choose to implement as many cool features as you want, and really make your game, you know, really, really impressive and really, really fun. So for all the hackers out there, there are tons of cool features that you can struggle to implement that'll be really fun and make your game super cool. So here's our agenda for today. So we'll go over the distribution code. We'll go through some HTML and CSS examples just so you see what those look like. And then, you know, you guys will go back when you go home or when you're working on this problem set and look through more of this HTML and CSS to know how to do it yourselves. And then we'll look at some JavaScript. And for this, mostly I'll point out some things that are super useful, like the fundamentals of object-oriented programming or arrays in JavaScript because they're slightly different. So I'll point out things like that, but a lot of this is just going to be pointing you to W3 schools or pointing you to JavaScript resources because, frankly, in the amount of time that we have in this walkthrough and the amount of time that David has in lecture, you can't possibly learn all of JavaScript. It's really going to be up to you. It took us so long to learn C, right? So now it's going to take us a lot less time to learn JavaScript, but you guys still need to really be active and look up that kind of information. Since it's also readily available in tutorials, that's why you don't see Harvard classes on various programming languages, because it's all so readily available online, and the information available is really rich and useful. We'll look at the APIs for Google Earth and Google Maps, but again, this is going to be, there's so much documented there. There's so many different functions that you can employ. There's so many cool things you could do that mostly I'm going to point you to some useful things like placemarks, which you'll need for all the people in the game. But then, you know, you'll mostly be left to explore on your own all the power that's in this API. And then we'll talk about what you guys actually have to implement, which is picking up passengers, dropping off passengers, and you get to choose another feature you can implement. Okay, so let's start with distribution code. So there's a ton. These are all the files that you'll get when you copy into your directory. You'll get index.html, that's the home page. So that'll frame how the page looks. It'll connect all the other functions to that page so that the browser can run them. Then you'll have, and we'll look at that, we'll actually walk through that file. And then we have buildings.js, which is just all the buildings in the game. And then we have houses, which will be all the Harvard houses and their location, so their exact latitudes and longitudes, because you'll need to know if you've arrived at a Harvard house, right? And you need to drive your passengers there and drop them off there. Then we have Math 3D, which is just the math for actually having the bus move and drop people off. You guys don't have to, again, this is all distribution code, not stuff that you guys have to write. Passengers is all the people in the game, so it'll just list, you'll see it's all CS50 staff. So it'll list their names and where they live and their usernames. Then you have service.css, which is a CSS file, right? So it's a style sheet that tells us how the homepage is supposed to look or how different elements of the page are supposed to be formatted. And we'll look at an example from there. And then service.js is the bulk of this problem set for you guys. So this is where you guys are going to be writing your functions. And this is the file that you really want to understand. So we'll also step through that one line by line, basically, or function by function. And then shuttle.js also has a lot of really valuable stuff, but it'll be more complex because it's all the motion of the shuttle, and it's all the features of the shuttle, basically. So it's a little bit tougher, a little bit more complicated. It would be tremendously valuable to you to understand it, but again, this one would take a little bit more time to understand than service.js, and you're not actually writing anything in it, so it's not as imperative that you understand what's going on there. Make sense? Okay. So let's go to an HTML example. So this is the head part of index.html. So this is straight from the distribution code. You see the head tag. It's in between two head tags. And what you have is the first thing you have is what? That first line. A link to what? A link to the style sheet, right? So this line is saying everything on this page, display it according to what I've spelled out in service.css. So that line alone serves to link those two files together. And we'll look at service.css later. And just know that's what that does. What does the next line do? Yes, so it connects us to Google's API. So when you use an API or an application programming interface, you get your own API key that allows you to develop using that API. So our key, or CS50's key in this case, is here. So you can see key equals and then a long string. That's the key for using this API. So you have to include that when you include an API. And then type is telling it that all this text is JavaScript. Right, so that's all that those lines are doing. That line is doing. And then down here, you're also including what? After that? Yes, you're including all the files that you need. So you're including all those files that we just talked about. So the math for allowing the shuttle to move, the actual shuttle .js, service.js, which is where you're writing all your functions, houses.js, buildings, passengers. Passengers has all the staff or all the people in the game, etc. So you're including all of these so that when you are loading the index, you also have access to all of these files. And then what does title do? That one's easy. Yeah, it just shows the title on top of the page, right, in the window. Make sense? So this is all simple. Right, warm up. Okay, so then the HTML body. You can see that the opening tag for the body actually calls some functions, right? So it has what are called event handlers. So when you have the event on key down, that means the user has pressed a key. Then you return this function, keystroke event true, right? So that's saying call the function keystroke, and you guys should look through keystroke and see what's actually happening inside that function. Basically, you know that it's going to be movement based on what key the user pressed. And then on key up, so when they stop pressing the key, then return keystroke event false, right? On load, so when the page loads, you call the load function. That makes sense, right? So that's going to load the actual map. It's going to load the API. So that makes sense. And then unload is at the very end. You unload everything. So these four functions we're going to look at, they're written. These three functions, keystroke, onload, and onunload. Sorry, unload, load, and keystroke. Yeah, that was right. So we'll look at those, and you guys should look at those, but know that they're being called right in the body of the HTML. Okay, so that's one function that the body in index.html has. The other function is that it organizes the page. So it tells you where to put different parts of the page. So you have div id equals left, so that's saying on the left side of the page, put the earth. That's what we're calling, that's the ID that we're giving earth. But when we call the API, we'll actually tell it to load the earth API there in that part of the screen. Then you have div ID right, and then you have, so within divs, you can have other divs. So you can divide the page into left and right, but then you can divide the right side of the page into multiple rows, right? So here we're having on the left, we're having the entire map, and or the entire earth, and then on the right, we're having the CS50 logo, we're having the buttons to pick up and drop off, we're having the list of all the passengers on the shuttle, and then we're having the two-dimensional map. Right, so to actually look at that, let's go here. So basically, this is index.html, right? This is the staff solution. So you have basically the logo is here. This is the logo. That's all it is. So this is the right side, right? And then you have these buttons. You have announcements. You have everyone who's on the shuttle. You have the two-dimensional map, right? And here you have the actual Earth. So as you can see, on key down, so I'm going to press the W key to move forward, and I'm driving, you know, both on the Earth and on the two-dimensional map. You can see me moving. So we're going, now we're by John Harvard, and now we're, this is Weld. I lived in Weld. Let's see if we can find a staff just for fun, because when I start playing this, it's hard for me to stop. Oh, no. Wait, which way do I turn? Oh, yes. Oh, we found one. Okay, cool. So Leonard. So we're going to pick up Leonard, and he has to go to Mather House. So if I didn't have to continue with this walkthrough, I'd probably go and drive, or pick up more people and drive Leonard to Mather House. Anyway, so I encourage you to play around with this game. Super fun. But anyway, so now you understand the basic layout of the page. So we can stop being distracted and procrastinating and keep going. So that makes sense, right? In the body, you guys have seen HTML before. You guys should be pretty comfy with both the body and head parts of index.html. So here's a very, very short example of CSS. So this is straight from service.css, which is what is dictating how our index.html actually gets displayed. Okay, so here's a short example of CSS. This is straight from service.css, which dictates what the homepage is going to look like, what index.html is going to look like. And this is just a short snippet from that, but all of the pieces of it look just like this. So you see div, hashtag or pound sign, announcements that says, do this for the div whose ID is announcements. So then you have the ID announcements. You had that before, right? When you aligned everything, you said div ID equals right. Well, that would be everything that's on the right side of the page. And you can say what the margins are for that, or what the font size is for everything on the right, or the background for everything on the right. You can group things like this. But we also had on the right side, we had the logo, we had people, we had the announcements. So that's what this is referring to, the announcements part of the right part, right? And when I say part, that's interchangeable basically with div. So when you do div, pound sign or hashtag announcements or whatever the ID is, that'll say for that ID, make these the characteristics. So here you have, for example, font size, margin, and text alignment. So you can say the announcement should always be centered. The font size should be small. Right, so you can do these kinds of things in CSS. And as you'll notice, in the index.html file, we're never saying what things should look like. Right, we're saying what text is going to be there, but we leave all the formatting to the CSS file. Make sense? Okay, so moving on to JavaScript. So HTML, CSS, you guys are a little bit more or less familiar with, especially after PSET 7, right, and some lecture stuff on that. But of course, these resources are always available online. Okay, so moving on to JavaScript. This is probably the most useful tutorial for JavaScript. So W3 Schools, and we can actually, I should already have that open. And here's the JavaScript tutorial from W3 Schools, and this is probably the same one you used for HTML. For HTML, and you probably could have used it for PSET 7. But anyway, so here's this is just the home page from the JavaScript basics, but you can literally, if you look here on the left, you can see everything you could possibly need to write in JavaScript, right? So let's say, for example, if you wanted to see an if-else, well, you probably already know how to do an if-else, but here it would tell you, it would show you examples. You could click this, try it yourself, and it'll let you actually change the code, and it'll show you what it would actually look like. It'll show you a for loop. It'll show you a while loop, right? So basically pretty familiar stuff. Then you have JavaScript objects. So JavaScript is an object-oriented language, which means that everything is sort of an object in JavaScript, and every object can have different properties and different methods. So methods would be functions of an object. So a function of an array is an object, right? And then a function of that array or a method of that array would be, for example, adding an element to it would be a method. But its length would be a property. Does that make sense? So methods are functions. So if you had an array as your object is an array, asking what the array's length is, so its length would be a property of that array. It would be descriptive somehow of the array. Asking to add an element to that array or to remove an element from that array would be methods, right? So methods are like functions based on that object. So we didn't really have this in C, right? You would have to pass an array to a function, for example, to be able to do that. Here you can just use a dot operator and have that method be performed on that function. And we'll see examples of this in the distribution code and in the slides, but just as a small introduction to that. So yeah, there's tons of examples. So here are examples of objects which are really useful. So here's that array object I was talking about. So here it'll tell you, I literally just clicked JavaScript examples, object examples, and you get how to create an array, how to use a for loop to go through all of the elements in an array. So this is super neat. In C, when we wanted to go through all the elements of an array, we had to go for I equals 0, I less than array length, I plus plus. In JavaScript, you'll see it's super simple. You can say for x in array y, right? And that takes each element of array y and temporarily stores it in a variable x that you can do whatever to, right? So you no longer have to use the I for loop, right, and then say array bracket I, and then do things to it, right? You already have that in this cool for construction. So that would tell you, so this would tell you how to do that. No, I don't want to wait for it to load. Oh, okay. Yeah, so here it shows you an example. So for you have this array, my cars, right? And every time you want, so we said an array is an object. And so you want, every time you want to create a new array, for example, in this case, you have to create a new instance of that object. So you can think of objects as a little bit similar to structs. Because you can see you have a struct that's a type, right? And then every time you want to use that struct, you have to create a new instance of it, right? So think back to your past problem sets. You always had this struct, but you couldn't do anything with it, right? You had to create a new instance of that struct. And the syntax was different, but the idea is very much the same. So here you create a new array, and that creates an instance of that array. Now that is called my cars. Now you can populate that array very, very similar to C, actually identical. except that JavaScript doesn't really care what size your array is going to be. But the actual populating the array is the same as in C. So you put, three different types of cars, and then you can have this for loop that goes through each element in the array. So in this case, x will be each car, right? And all you have to write is for x in my cars. Make sense? Super easy, right? Aren't you so thankful for this? And you'll see you'll probably make some use of that. So here you have all sorts of other functions that you could perform or methods you could perform on array objects. So some of them that might be useful, well, let's say you wanted to remove the last element of an array. Well, there's apparently this pop function, or pop method. So you can click on pop and know that if you had that myCars array, you could have done myCars.pop, and it would give you the last element of that. It would take off the last element of that array. Right? You could add new elements, so that's push. So let's take a look at push. So basically, if you have if you have an array of fruits, so you declare it right here, you put banana, orange, apple, mango, and then you do fruits, and the document.write is just so that we can actually print out the results so we can see what's happening. That's not actually changing the array, that's just printing it out for you. But you can do fruits.push, so calling the push method on the fruits object, or on the fruits array. And so what's push supposed to do? Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to add an element to the end of the array. So as you can see, kiwi gets added. Then you do push lemon and pineapple get added. Right? So super easy. Imagine in C, if you wanted to add an element to an array, how long would that take you? A while, right? You would have to you'd have to create a new array of a larger size. So if size n plus 1, then you'd have to copy over each element of the old array and then put in your new element, right? So it would take an awfully long time. So that's why this gives you this function push. So again, super useful. And you'll want to look through in here anytime you have an object and you want to perform some method on it, look on this website for what you could possibly do. And you'll see all the answers will be in here. And this is the heart of the problem set. So the heart of the problem set is going to be I have to do this function in order to pick, I have to do something like of this sort to pick up my passengers or to drop off my passengers, and you'll just browse on here until you find something where it clicks and you say, oh, this is exactly what I need. Make sense? So that's sort of an example of how we're gonna peruse that. So here I kind of already covered some of this. So here's that fruits example that we just did with the pushing kiwi onto the list or et cetera. So if you wanted to create an array, again, it doesn't care what size it is. So you can literally just put the two brackets. What are those called? Just brackets, right? And just put an open bracket, closed bracket, and then the semicolon to declare that array of fruits. And then you can populate it later. For objects in general, you can create a passenger object, right? This is why I say it's kind of similar to structs, because it's the same idea, right? For each passenger, you want to know their username, their actual name, and their house. So you can put all of this information into this passenger's object. Make sense? So now you have an array and you have an object. So why couldn't you make an array of objects? Well, you can. So this is similar to a linked list, for example. If you had all your students in C and you wanted to put them, or like all the students in your section, you wanted to put them in a linked list together or in an array, you could have an array of students, right? That makes sense, or a linked list of students. So here you can have an array of objects. So if we called that passengers, again, we would use those square brackets is what they're called. So we'd use square brackets to declare that array, but inside of it we can use curly brackets or curly braces, I don't know what they're called, to declare objects within it. Right, so my array of passengers is an array of passenger objects, right? So for each one of those, I use the curly braces to populate it. Does that make sense? So here's the same passenger I had before, right? Alex Chang, who was my TF when I took CS50, and is also first alphabetically, and that's why he's on here. But yeah, so you can put him in, and then you can separate it by commas, right? When you put elements in an array, you can just separate them by commas, and then you can put more and more passenger objects. Does that make sense? So this already exists for you. So this passengers array of objects that I have copied and pasted here, that's from passengers.javascript, passengers.js from the distribution code. So if you want to see that example, I obviously didn't copy and paste the entire array because it's all the passengers or all the people in the game. So again, just to reiterate the functions that come with these arrays, again, there are more at this link above, which is where I got them from. So if we had that fruits array, we can push kiwi onto it, which means adding kiwi. We can pop, which means get the last one off. What's this fruits.splice 01? It doesn't split the array. What does it do? It takes two arguments, 0 and 1. So let's say I declared this array fruits at the top, right? I have var fruits and it's empty. Then I call push on, and put kiwi on the string kiwi. I put kiwi into that array. And then let's pretend I didn't do pop and I just did fruits.splice 01. What would that do? Okay, so this is a question you want to answer for yourself because it'll help you with the problem set. Okay, so for all these functions, so fruits.length, what would that give you?
The length of the array.
Yeah, so it would give you the length of the array. So if I just push kiwi on it, it would give me 1, right? Yeah, so all these and more will be useful. So definitely check out that link, see everything you can do on an array, because you have this array of passengers to look at as an example, and that'll help you also think about objects because each one has, like I said, their username, their name, and the house that they need to get transported to that they also live in. Make sense? Okay, so the Google Maps API is linked here, and the Google Earth API is linked here. They're also linked in the problem set, so we'll look at those that documentation. So this is the Google Maps one. So as you can see, there's a ton of information here. I'm on just the basics page, which will, introduce it to you. It'll let you do, geolocation, basic stuff like that that you might be interested in maps. And also these APIs are useful not just for this problem set, but for all sorts of things that you could do, right? Think about anywhere that you could possibly use a map, right? And you can use these APIs to do that. And actually, in my summer internship, I used the Bing Maps API to do something. So, these are infinitely useful if you, are creative about them and think about where you might use them. Okay, so you have the basics. It can walk you through a little tutorial on how to get started, and it'll do basically the hello world of Google Maps. And on the Google Earth one, they do hello Earth, which I think is cute. I do. So basically it'll walk you through all the sorts of features of this API, so all of the things that are possible using the API. So one is events, so what kind of events happen? And so some of the basic events are clicking or mouse up, mouse down. So this is how the user can interact with the map and how you can handle it with event listeners or event handlers. There are various controls. So it'll tell with the person navigating through your map, and you can see examples of all of this. So everything that they, all the features of the Google Maps API, they'll show you examples of how to do it. So overlays are particularly interesting, if they'll load, because here we have markers. And markers, if we go down here, you can see an example of markers being used. But the way markers are used in this problem set are all the people are actually markers, right? All the people on the two-dimensional map are markers. There's a little person icon that we put in on the place where that, and we pseudo-randomly chose where these people would be placed, right? And this is all the passengers. So you can put a marker on the map. This is the same as in on CS50's homepage at the beginning of the term when you guys all geocoded yourselves, right? You said where you live and you were placed, there was a marker placed for you on the map. Or that might have been Google, or was that Google Earth or was it 2D? It was 2D, right? It was a map, yeah. So we put you on the map with a little blue balloon, a blue marker. It was red, a red marker. So that's what this is. So again, think about when you could possibly want to mark things on a map, you know, points of interest, kind of like on a travel website or something like that. Super useful stuff. So this is something in particular you'd want to look at. So the markers for the people, because that's something that's very much used in this problem set. Again, you could go on and on to see all the, there's code samples, there's galleries. You could see how other people have used this API. So really cool stuff in the Google Maps API. And this was actually last year's problem set was all Google Maps API. So we got pretty familiar, or the last 2 years, we got pretty familiar with that. This year, way, 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 way cooler is Google Earth. Obviously, you guys already saw the demo of going through Harvard's campus. So super cool, super fun, really allows you to implement games. And in the same way, it's organized on Google Code. It tells you all the possibilities of using this. It'll have an introduction. Like I said, it'll teach you how to do the Hello Earth, which is just getting warmed up using the API. I highly encourage you doing that. And then you have place marks, which are incredibly similar, right, to the markers on the two-dimensional map, but for the three-dimensional Earth map, right? So the place marks are the actual pictures of the staff in the game, right? So whereas the markers are little icons of the people in the two-dimensional map, the place markers on Google Earth's API are the actual photos of the staff. Make sense? So you want to look through place marks here and see exactly how those are implemented. And so when you're looking at this, it would be helpful to look at this and the function populate, which is in the distribution code, to see how populate uses this feature of the API to put in all the images of the staff, right? So you can see each. So basically you see that each place marker has a latitude and a longitude, and that would be useful to you, right? Because when you're picking up people, you need to know, are those people right next to the shuttle, right? So you have the shuttle's location, right? Because that's in the distribution code, but you also need to figure out their location. So the location of this place marker. If you're doing it on the 2D map, then the location of the marker. Make sense? So this is why all of these are going to be useful to you. So you're going to need to really understand place markers for the parts that you're implementing. Make sense? Okay. There's a whole lot of other fun stuff here that you should totally play around with, but I'd say place marks are the place to start because they're highly relevant to what you guys are actually going to be writing. So like I said, service.js is the big file you want to pay attention to, and we'll actually walk through it right now, and the code that you're writing is in there as well. So here you see all the distribution code is in there, and we're going to look at service.js. Okay, so I'm actually going to walk through this entire file because it's all very useful. So you have basic variables defined up here. So you see the latitude and longitude are the defaults. This is when you first load the page, the latitude and longitude you'll be on. This var seats is basically a constant telling you that the number of seats on the shuttle is 35. So this is something that you'll want to check against, right? Because in the pickup function, you care if there are seats available on the shuttle. So you are going to somehow keep track of how many people are sitting on the shuttle, but you know that the maximum number of seats is 35. So you'll want to compare to this number. Velocity may be useful to you if you choose to implement the feature of allowing the shuttle to slow down or speed up, which is a really cool, fun feature if you're into the gaming aspect of this problem set. So then you'll care a lot about this this velocity variable. Right? And then here you have the shuttles. Again, we talked about markers. So you see that this bus is going to be somehow related to the marker on the two-dimensional map. So anytime you see bus, you kind of want to go to the API documentation and say, well, what is this marker thing? What properties does it have? What methods can I call on it? Because it's all in JavaScript, right? So you'll have properties and methods of one of these markers. The Earth, so we create a variable, just a placeholder basically for the Earth, and later when we load it, we're going to use that variable. And here's the reference to the map. So we have the Earth, the map, the bus, the shuttle. So the shuttle is going to have its own features that are all declared in shuttle.js, right? So it's going to have, its current location, its speed, stuff like that. So then you call this function, so you call google.load, and this is directly from the API. So this is directly from the Google Earth API. They actually give you this code in the introduction of how to start using this, or maybe it's in the Hello Earth. They give you this line of code, and that's just copied and pasted. So it's how to actually load the Earth. And then the next line is how to load the two-dimensional map, right? Then we start having the functions, right? So all those are kind of preliminary, setting up variables, loading the page. Then we start having functions. So drop off, as you can see, is up to you to code, right? So we just have a to do. And what's this alert doing? So the function drop off happens when?
It's that thing that appears if you haven't filled
out something on the page. It's a pop-up warning, right? It's one of those things that you have to click OK. That's an alert. So here we have an alert just tell you have to do this. So if you click drop off now when you get the distribution code and you load the page, if you click drop off, it'll just pop up with this alert that you have to do it. But the reason we use alert is because you have to know that you have to do it, but also alert is very useful debugging tool. So Firebug is one useful debugging tool if you're using Firefox, because you can actually print out various variables while you're running the program, which is incredibly useful. But a similar way of doing that is with this alert. So before, when sometimes TFs would come up to you, or maybe you yourself would realize that it would help you to put in a printf at various points in your file so you can see the value of variables. So now the way you're going to do that, it's either by using the actual console in Firebug, so you can treat that kind of like your terminal window or your PuTTY window, or you could use this alert function. So alert is a JavaScript function that will make that pop-up come up, and it'll put whatever text, it'll put whatever string you pass it as the text in that alert. So you can pass it variables, right, and figure out the value of those variables based on that. Very, very useful. Something that happens at the problem set spec even warns you of is if you put an alert in a loop, you're going to have to keep clicking OK or just exit the file because, it's really annoying and awful. So don't put alerts in loops unless those loops terminate and you actually care about at each iteration of the loop what the value of the variable is. But definitely a very useful debugging tool. So here, failure CB is just if Google Earth fails to load. Again, this came directly from the Google Earth API. So you should read through the API if you're curious about how that actually works. So this similarly came straight from, or a lot of this came straight from the Google Earth API. This is if loading does work. So if loading doesn't work, you get the fail function, which we just saw. If loading does work, you get this initializing function. And so it'll create the actual Earth. It'll load everything. It'll initialize the API. But then this we added. So what is this doing? This right here. Yeah, so it's creating an instance of a shuttle. So again, we said shuttle is an object, right? So we're creating an instance of that object. So similarly to if we had a shuttle struct that had all of these properties and we were creating a new shuttle, that's what this is doing. So it's creating a new shuttle. They're called objects. Yeah, they're called like classes in PHP. Yeah, effectively the same thing. So you're creating a new shuttle object. So shuttle is with a capital S is the actual object, and then shuttle with a lowercase s is your instance of this object, right? So you manipulate shuttle with a lowercase s, Because the uppercase is just telling it what features or what properties and methods it's supposed to have. So here, you're creating a new one. You're telling it that the heading should be the heading, height should be. And if you want to see how all of these variables are actually used, that's when you look into shuttle.js. And I definitely encourage you to do that. So two really important things are latitude and longitude. Right? Now they're being set to the latitude and longitude that are the default. So that word declared at the top of the file is the default. That's the all caps variables. We just saw those declared. Similarly, velocity is now the default velocity. But if you wanted to increase the velocity of your shuttle and you have this instance shuttle, how might you refer to velocity? Well, you would refer to lowercase shuttle and then what? Dot velocity, right? Very simple. So similarly to struct and C, similarly to the classes, or when you had that class of stock in PSET 7 in PHP, and you could do like stock.price or s.price, whatever. Or it was arrow. Yeah, it was arrow. So same thing, right? Different notation, but same idea. Make sense? So that's the shuttle object, yeah. Yeah. So new is a function. So new is saying new shuttle. So you're calling this function and you're passing it these arguments. So that's the parentheses. The parentheses are because you're actually calling a function right now. And then the curly braces are because it's an object. And every time we have an object, we populate its fields using curly braces. And then on the left, it's what property or method you're referring to, then colon, and then what value you want to put inside.
So shuttle takes in its parameters an
object? Well, Yeah. Shuttle takes as its parameters the object. You're creating the object, right? So you have to tell it what each property is going to have. Okay. So this is also allowing you to update, like, the camera or update the window as the person moves. Then populate, so that's also just from the Google Earth API. And then populate puts the actual passengers inside the game. So this is all the CS50 staff members that are all around and all the houses, right? So we're going to see how that happens in the populate function, but that's calling that function. So once you initialize Google Earth, you should call this function, you should create a shuttle. These are all the kind of the preparatory things before you can start playing the game. So this is keystroke. So this is very similar to what we did in game of 15? Oh, and Sudoku, right? So in Sudoku, we had that switch statement. In game 15, I think we also allowed you, if you typed different numbers, we would swap. Actually not in 15, but just in Sudoku. But anyway, so you had that switch statement. This is effectively doing the same thing. So it'll allow you to take different input from the user, and it's just using an if and else or else ifs instead of using the switch, but effectively doing the same thing. So again, in the shuttle.js, you want to look at this idea of states and see what a state is in the shuttle and see why we're changing the state the way we are. So turning right, we're tilting downward. I mean, it makes intuitive sense. You can kind of infer what that's doing. So this is basically handling all user input, this function. You have the load function. This is lagging a little bit in scrolling. But this is also from the Google Map API. This is from Google Map, right? So you're actually loading the map. You're writing it to the document, which means that you're putting it in the actual HTML, right? And we're saying get element by ID map, because in our HTML, we have an ID map, right? So we want to write all this map into that div or into that ID that we created before in our HTML file, right? So this is loading that map in where we said we'd have a map or where we use the ID map. So this is all already done for you, but cool to understand. It's centering the map at the current latitude, at the latitude longitude, right? What else does it do? It allows you to control it. It doesn't let you use the scroll wheel to move it, stuff like that. Interesting things to play around with. Then we have the shuttle's icon is what on the map? What that we've already seen? Yeah, it's the blue thing. But what we looked at the Google Maps API, we looked at certain features from it. What feature are we using to have this shuttle appear on the map? Marker, exactly. So the bus is a marker on this map. So just like you guys were all markers when CS50 put you all on a map to see where all our students are, that's how the bus is also a marker, right? The icon, this is getting an image of a bus, right? So it's saying that that should be the icon, and the map we're using is the map that we just created up here, right? So this is where we created the map. We created a new google.maps.map, right? So the google.maps.map is the object, right? And we created a new instance of it and we stored that in lowercase map. And then here we're saying, okay, for that, on that map, put this icon. And the title is just you are here. Make sense? And here, so that was preparing. So now we're embedding the 3D Earth, right? So that was preparing and embedding the two-dimensional map. So not the Earth, but two-dimensional map on the bottom right of the screen. This one is actually calling google.earth.createInstance to create the actual Earth, right? Okay. So here is pickup, which is also, these are just in alphabetical order, obviously. But here is pickup, which you have to do. So this will pick up passengers, and we'll go a little bit more into it. But first, let's look at populate. So populate is what will actually put all the people in the game and all the houses, so the Harvard houses and the CS50 staff, onto the earth. So here you see that for loop construction that we talked about that's super easy and super handy in JavaScript, where you can say for var house in houses. So houses is an array of all the Harvard houses and their latitudes and longitudes, right? And this is in, I believe the file is called houses.js. And so you're saying for each house, which we're storing in this temporary variable house, in that array, do this. So what do you want to do for each house? Exactly. You want to put the house on the map using what? Markers. Exactly. So here you see again this idea of a new marker on the map. So you create a new marker, you tell it what icon to put, and it's a little picture of a house, which is really cute also. You tell it which map to do. Oh, it's the map that we just created an instance of. And then you tell it what position to put it at. So what is this telling it? So it's telling it to create, so just like we can create a new marker, which is an object, we can also create a new lat long or latitude longitude, which is also an object. So latitude longitude object obviously has a latitude and a longitude, and together they tell you where to place something on a map, right? So if you want to place a marker, you have to tell it its position. The position is defined by the latitude and longitude or this one object, lat long. So you have to pass this function to create a new lat long the latitude and the longitude of the house. So you can place the marker for that house on that latitude and longitude. So the way you get the latitude and longitude of the house is for each of the Harvard houses in house.js, we have the latitude and longitude of that house. So this is kind of, you can think of it as similar to a hash table because you can look up by house its latitude and longitude. And look in houses.js, or if we have time, we'll actually look at it, houses.js, where you can see that for each house, you have both the latitude and longitude of that house, and this is how you refer to it. So houses is the name of the big array, right? Houses is the name of the big array, and then in brackets you tell it this house, right? Because this for loop is going to go through each of the houses each Harvard house, or each dorm, I'll call them dorms so that I don't keep saying house and make it confusing. So for each dorm in the houses array, it'll go to that dorm and it'll get its latitude and its longitude. Make sense? So this houses refers to the big array. This house refers to the one that we're up to right now in the for loop. And then this gets its latitude property. Make sense? Of that object. This gets longitude property. Together, those will create the lat long object, which tells us the position where we want to put the marker. Does that make sense? Okay. So here we have another for loop going through each of the buildings, right? So some houses have more than one building. That's why we go through buildings. And we try to randomly place passengers around different houses. Okay, so that's why we use this math.random, and we pick a random building and then put the passenger near that building. Does that make sense? So here we're creating a place mark, right? Earth, so that's the Google Earth API. Everything in the Google Earth API will be referred to as Earth dot, because Earth is our instance of it, right? So Earth dot create place mark, right? So you're going to create this place mark, and then you'll set the name of the place mark to be the passenger and where they're going. right? So you want to know for each. So this is when you're driving around the campus and you get to a CSSG staff member, a little bubble will pop up that says their name and what house they're trying to go to. So this is where that's put in, right? And then you also want to create an icon for them, right? Because a place marker will have a name and it'll have an icon. So the name, again, is where, who they are, where they're going. And that's created there, here, right, in that line. But then you also want an icon for them. So we create an icon object. And that icon, we want it to, we're actually going to use a link to an image of that person. So the images of that person are in this passengers directory, inside the same directory as this whole problem set, into the PSET 8 directory. You have a passengers directory, and then inside that directory you have images of all the staff, and it's going to be their username and then the extension .jpg. Right? So you use this to get the URL of each image and put that as the icon for the place marker. Right? So place markers are very similar to markers. Right? Do you see how they're similar, place marks and markers, except they have a slightly different way of behaving. So that's what these two functions are demonstrating to you, these two for loops. One puts the markers on the 2D map, and one puts the place marks on the 3D map. Make sense? Okay. So this basically just styles that map. It'll set the point where to put it, etc. Here you see another method of each place mark. So we created a new place mark, and we see this set geometry, and it's taking point. Well, point up here is an object, right, where we're taking the latitude and longitude of the random building we chose to place them by, right? So we chose a random building on campus to place this person, this staff member by. We chose it by latitude and longitude. And now we're going to pass that latitude and longitude, or that point, to set geometry so that that place mark gets put there. Again, very similar to the markers on the 2D map where we passed a lat-long object, except here we're creating a we're passing a point object. Same thing, just different, different method of doing it. So for each place mark, you set its geometry, you're just telling it where to go. So similarly, and this will be very helpful to you, you can get the geometry of a place mark, right? That makes sense, right? So if you can set the geometry, there should also be a method to get the geometry, right? And as with any method from the API, you can actually look in the documentation of the API for exactly how to do that. And you're going to want to know where these people are, right, or where these place marks are, because place marks represent all of the staff. So geometry is, so the question was, I'm confused what geometry is. Geometry is where you are on the Earth. So this marker's geometry is its position on the Earth.
So is it lat-long?
Yeah, and so it's the same. So lat-long is on the two-dimensional map, and geometry is on the three-dimensional map. Right, right. So it's similar to lat long. Make sense? So you take this point, right, and you set its latitude to be the building latitude. You set its longitude to be the building longitude, where you want to place the staff member because they're all standing by buildings. And then you call their place mark, and set geometry is the method that you're supposed to pass a point to. So pass a latitude longitude. So set geometry is the method. Point is more like lat long. Okay, so you add the place mark to Earth. So again, Earth is our instance of the Google Earth API. So anything we want to do, we do Earth dot. So we get features. So features are, like, all place marks are features, right? So we get its features. Append child basically means to add a feature, because these are all represented kind of like a tree, right, with parent and child nodes. So you want to add a feature to the Google Earth map. I guess it's a map. And so you want to add this place mark, you call the function append child. So all these functions seem super random and out of nowhere, and you've never seen them before. That's why we encourage you to spend as much time as possible on the API, learning what all these functions are, learning what appending children is. So again, just like before with set geometry, get geometry, if there's a way to add place marks to the map, well, there must be a way of removing place marks, right? So you want to snoop around and find the way of removing the actual image of the person or their place mark from the map, because when you pick them up, you want to take their image off, right? That's how you're picking up passengers. Make sense? Okay. So now here we're just adding the marker to the map, right? So this is for the two-dimensional map, right? Okay. You'll have to what?
You have to, like, tweet populate to take people off. You have to go into populate.
So to, she said to take people off, you have to tweak populate. No, you can do it inside the pickup function. You can take their marker off inside the pickup function. Because you'll have, you'll somehow identify their place marker, and then you can call this, whatever method it is that takes someone off, takes a place marker off, you'll call it within your pickup function. But you do have to change populate, because right now it puts all the people on the around the earth, it scatters all the passengers, but it doesn't actually keep track of them, right? So you'll want to actually somehow, and this is where your design discretion comes in, you want to keep track of all the passengers, and if they've been picked up or not, for example. Okay, and where they're standing and stuff. And this is just when you make changes to the map to, you know, move the center of the map. So this is just as you move along, you have to move the center of the map, and you have to move this bus marker, right, because the bus has to move when you move. So, for example, if you wanted to implement one of the features that replaced the bus with an arrow, you would have to, you'd first of all change the icon from bus to arrow, just find an image of a random arrow. But then you'd also have to, every time you move the arrow, you'd have to make sure you also turned it the right way, so that the arrow was actually pointing the way the bus. And that would actually be very helpful, because when I was playing the game, I couldn't, for the life of me, figure out which way the bus was pointing, which I think is a really easy thing to do, but I just wasn't getting it. Okay, so then this just unloads the Earth, so it removes removes all the event handlers that are waiting for stuff to happen to the Earth. Make sense? So again, we're back to the directory. You should definitely look at the very least, you should look at index.html for, you know, how the basic page works. We looked at most of it, but just go back. Then service.css to see, this will be like a really concrete example of a CSS file. Go in there. You can alter it if you want to change the appearance of the page. Definitely, we just looked through service.js, but my inclination is that you'll have to spend more time there. And definitely look at shuttle.js, because a lot is happening in there. The math one, look at it if you're curious, but it's not going to be, definitely not going to be the most important one. Buildings, houses, those are just arrays of all the buildings and houses, so, and passengers, same thing. And then the passengers directory just has photos of all the staff. So you don't have to really look at those. But you can if you're curious. I mean, it will be helpful to know how arrays and objects are declared. So for those, definitely building CS, has.cs, passengers.js, sorry, not CS. Which one did I say we would go into that would be useful? Houses, right? So yeah, here you see, it looks a lot like a hash table, right? Even when we drew a hash table, when we had that like big array and then it was pointing to other things, isn't that kind of what this looks like? So you have each house, literally the name of the house, it's a string, and then you have its latitude, longitude. So that's why you can refer to it as houses, and then square brackets, the actual string name of the house, and then dot latitude, right? Because each house is associated with an object that contains latitude, longitude. So it's a lat long. Right? Cool. Okay, so that's pretty much going through service.js and all the important features of that. So now we're going to go through all the things that you guys have to implement. You'll see we've kind of touched on a lot of them, and that'll be helpful. And then for everything we haven't touched on, you guys surely have the resources to go there. But I think we touched on everything. So you have to implement this pickup function that allows you to pick up passengers. So basically, if the shuttle is within 15 meters of the passenger, or of a passenger, you don't have to check for a specific passenger, but of a passenger, and then at least one seat on the shuttle is empty. So this is why we said you have to keep track of the number of seats on the shuttle that have been taken. So then you want to remove the passenger from the 2D and 3D maps, right? You remove them from both maps. So this is why we talked a lot about markers and place marks, right, because you'll have to remove those, so it's helpful to understand how they were put there. And then you go to the Google Maps API to see how they might be removed. And then you want to put them in a seat. So this idea of seats is totally up to you. You can implement it as an object, as an array. It really doesn't matter. But you have to have this idea of a seat and how you're going to keep track of who's actually on the bus. Also, when you put them in a seat, you also have to update the HTML, right, to say who's in what seat. Or it doesn't matter what seat, but who's in seats. Right, so you put them in. So you put them behind, under the hood. You put them in a seat, but you also have to display on the HTML that you've put them in a seat. And we'll see a tool for doing that shortly. And so then, if you're not within 15 meters, you want to announce. So you have that announcement section. And again, that's HTML. Right, the announcements are all HTML. So we're going to see that tool for how to update the HTML on the page. But you'll want to announce that no one is trying to get picked up there. So that's one way of failing the pickup. The other one is if there are no seats left. So again, you have some sort of counter, it tells you how many seats are left, and if there are no seats left, then you want to announce that there are no seats, you can't put this person in. And again, when the shuttle moves, you want to clear the announcements. Yeah.
So every time you press a key, it should say, like, if you're not going to continue to someone, then it should say no one is trying to get picked up, like every time you press
a key. The question is, every time you press a key, it's going to say no one's trying to get picked up? No, it's only when you press the pickup button. There's a pickup button on the homepage. Yeah, so when you press pickup, that's what calls the pickup function. So if they've pressed pickup and no one's there, it probably means that they're just not close enough. They'll have to like back up a little or move up a little. But yeah, so that's when pickup gets called. So that's pickup. Drop-off is really similar. It's if the shuttle is within 30 meters of a house. So whereas in pickup, you're checking if the shuttle is within, and we'll see how to check where the shuttle is, but you're checking if the shuttle is within 15 meters of any passenger. Now you're checking if the shuttle is within 30 meters of any house. And you have this array of passengers and array of houses. And you have the latitude longitude for each house, and you have the latitude longitude of each place marker for each passenger. So for each passenger, since they're randomly distributed in the passengers array, all you have is their username, their name, and the house that they live in. But then for each of them, you've created a place mark, right? And that place mark does have a latitude longitude, okay? Or it does have a point. So you'll find out you'll explore this place mark feature of the Google Earth API to find out how to extract a latitude and a longitude so that you can pass those to this function to see where the shuttle is in relation. But drop-off is actually easier because in your associative array, so in your array where you have, we just saw Adam's house and then latitude, longitude, in there you have the latitude and longitude. So you can just find out where the shuttle is based on those. And again, we'll see the function to do that, just introducing what you actually have to do. So if they're within 30 feet of their house, drop them off. So if multiple people are within 30 feet of their house, drop them all off and empty their seats. You don't have to show their place mark again, like you don't have to show their image or anything, you just have to empty their seat. So again, in however you're implementing seats, you want to empty them and you want to update the HTML to say that those seats are now free. If you're implementing the special feature of awarding points every time you drop someone off, this would be somewhere to put that in, right? So every time you drop someone off, you want to increment the number of people you've dropped off and add some points or something like that based on that number. That makes sense? If you couldn't drop them off, then you want to announce that no one's supposed to be dropped off there. So if you're in front of Adam's house, you have the latitude, longitude of Adam's house, and no one's supposed to go there, then you don't drop anyone off. So you announce that in the HTML again. Okay, so these are the features they get to choose from, and you can even make your own feature. That's the last one. Just make sure you email your TF if you want to do that, just so they can approve it. But so this is really cool. So for those of you that want a challenge, that want to end CS50 with a bang, so to speak, definitely try to implement as many as you can because it'll make the game super fun and it'll be exciting for you to do as well. But bare minimum is just one of these features, but really, really encourage yourselves to do more because that's really what's going to make this problem set fun and cool for you guys. So basically the point system, which I alluded to, so making sure that the person can get, the driver gets rewarded every time they drop someone off, a timer to make sure the whole game takes place within a certain amount of time and ending the game when time runs out, so you can use these functions to do that. This is supposed to be two separate things. So group passengers by house. So that makes sense, right? Just group them by house so that you know how many people to drive to each house. And then fly should be on the next line. Allow your shuttle to fly. Super cool. Again, look into the Google Earth API to see how you might implement flying. Replace your bus with an arrow. We talked about that one. Teleporting is just going directly to a certain latitude longitude. Again, look in the Google Earth API to know how to do that. Speeding up, slowing down, we talked about. You would manipulate the velocity. Ensure passengers get placed far from their house. So this would be altering the populate function to make sure that if you live in Adam's house, you're not being put right in front of Adam's house. So ride around other campuses, or you know, your hometown. So this is again going to another latitude longitude. Autopilot is don't teleport somewhere, but actually drive somewhere on autopilot. Also really cool. And you can drive through buildings, so we allow you to do that. And the next one is, I like this one, I think this is really fun. Keep track of how much fuel the driver has, and then like create little gas station icons where they can go to refuel. So then if you're within X meters of a gas station, your fuel variable goes up, and like you have some sort of illustration of what fuel looks like, and then make your own feature, like we said. So here's some help for you. So this line of code will get the distance of the shuttle to a certain latitude longitude. So shuttle.distance. So shuttle is your instance of the shuttle, right? That's why it's lowercase. So shuttle and then dot distance is the method, and it'll take a latitude and longitude, and it'll return how far you are. Okay, so if you pass latitude and longitude of a house, you'll know how far the shuttle is from a house. But you can't know that, you don't know when the shuttle is standing in front of Adam's house, you don't know that that's Adam's house, so you actually have to check if the shuttle is near any house. So you're going to have to iterate over all your houses, right, and check if the shuttle is nearby. Then features will get all the place marks. So get features will get all the place marks, then you can manipulate those place marks, which you'll need to do. Remove child P will remove the place mark P. So just like we saw before, the like adding a child to the features of the Google Earth, we can also. And then we can change HTML text as promised by referring to the document. So the document is the HTML file that people actually see, so that the browser loads and people see. So document get elements by ID seats is the ID seats that we created in index.html, right? We had div ID equals seats. So then the inner HTML is basically all the text in that div. We have div ID equals seats. The inner HTML is all that text. So we can put anything in there. You can put a variable in there. Same thing for announcements. You can change all the announcements. We have to take a tape break, so I'm going to stop. So we'll also allow you to change the HTML text that's actually being displayed by index.html. We can't change the actual index.html file, but we will need to change what information is being displayed when we list all the seats. So in our index.html, if you remember, we had a div whose ID was seats. So that represented all the seats. And right now it says empty seat, empty seat, empty seat, and it's an ordered list. So look through that HTML. You don't have to represent it as an ordered list, but that's how it is now, and it just represents all 35 seats as being empty. So obviously when you pick up a passenger, you have to make it so that the seat is no longer empty. So this is how you're going to change that actual HTML that the browser is going to display. So if you refer to the document, so that's all the HTML on the page, then dot get element by ID, because you had that ID seats. So we pass getElementID method, the actual ID that we want to go to. So we're going to seats, and then we want to access the inner HTML there. So all the HTML between the open tag for div ID equals seats and the close tag for that div. So anything in there, now we can put whatever we want in here, and it'll display that HTML. Does that make sense? So now we can put in hello world, and that'll display hello world instead of all that seat stuff. Obviously, you don't want that, but you want to put in what passengers you just picked up. And we leave it up to you what information you want to put for that passenger. Same thing for announcements. You want to change the announcements every time you want to announce the score, for example, if you're implementing the points feature, or if you want to announce that no one actually needs to be picked up here, or no one actually needs to be dropped off here. You want to change the inner HTML of the announcements ID. So again, you don't want to put hello world, but you can put whatever string you want to put there, and you can include variables. Whatever you can write in HTML, you can put in here, because it's just going to replace the HTML in that div with whatever you write here. So basically just write HTML in here. Okay? Okay. So remember all the resources you have. So like I said, this problem set is very much about empowering you to take the tools that you're given, the resources that you're given, and then the knowledge that you have now by taking CS50, by learning C for so long, basically, or it wasn't really that long, but for spending a semester doing computer science, use all those tools and use all the resources at your disposal to implement really cool stuff. So your huge resource in the distribution code. So look at what you have given and what you can make from what you already have. You're given a tremendous amount of code. You're not writing a lot of code, and a lot of what you're writing has already been written. So look at what's already been written to see what could be useful to you. So now that you have the functions that you need to write in mind, always think as you're reading through the distribution distribution code, what might be helpful from this? Similarly, the two APIs. So it's really cool, I think, that you're using two different APIs because you'll get to know how they vary. And there are APIs for all sorts of websites on the internet. So like Twitter has an API where you can use different tweets to do stuff. A lot of Harvard things have APIs. CS50's website has APIs. So there's like a HUDs API for using HUDs data, stuff like that. So this could all be really useful for the problem set as well. Facebook has an API, stuff like that. So definitely look at those APIs in depth, and that'll be the bulk of where you're going to find all the functions that you need. So it's similar to how we sent you to look at, you know, various C functions like round, and we asked you to look at the man page or to Google them. So similarly, look at all the functions that are brought to you by these APIs, and it's really wonderful. It's really amazing that Google will let you do so much, and they'll give you so many of their functions and so much of their code. So definitely take advantage of that. Then the W3 schools link to JavaScript, basically all sorts of syntactical issues, how to work with, if you're still confused about object-oriented programming. Wikipedia also has a good page about object-oriented programming. So definitely spend some time looking through the JavaScript on there. Again, this will be great warm-up for your final project. It'll be really fun. Send it to your friends. Play the game a lot. Have fun with this one. Really make something that you're proud of, because this will be, besides the final project, this will be kind of the end to CS50. So thanks for watching these walkthroughs. I really hope they've been helpful. It was my pleasure doing them. And thanks for coming. Good luck on this problem set. Thanks, guys. I'll stay back for questions.